It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
Welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. Still about a month away from SEC Media Days, but we are in the midst of camp season, busy covering that every day from Texas to Illinois to Michigan to wherever else Missouri coaches might show up over the next few days. But we're going to focus elsewhere today and bring in a guy who knows a little bit about Missouri, follows him from Kansas City, from a place where, you know, Missouri fans like to complain they don't get enough coverage. So we're going to bring in a guy that does give them coverage up in Kansas City. Carrington Harrison from 610 Sports in Kansas City does the afternoon show with Danny Parkins. Carrington, how you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm really excited to be on you guys' podcast today.
Yeah, appreciate you taking some time. And first off, for Missouri fans who are in Kansas City, just kind of give everybody an idea where they can find you, both online, on the air, all that, and kind of just, you know, what your show, how you describe your guys' show.
How you can find our show, 610 Sports. That's the frequency, 610 AM. You can either go on the website, 610sports.com. We are on iTunes now. Podcast-wise, the show is on every day from 2 to 6. I think the best way to describe the show is it is a little bit of life and is a little bit about Kansas City sports. I think that's kind of the direction of where media is going now. It's a little bit more personality-driven because there's so many different media outlets that you can get scores and information from and stats and opinion. There's no shortage of that right now on the internet. So I think our show does a really good job of trying to blend the two things, giving you a little bit of sports, a little bit of pop culture, a little bit of movie, and a little bit about our personal lives.
And you, you're definitely a guy that follows Mizzou, a Mizzou fan. Where's the background for that?
My dad actually was a big Missouri fan, and I didn't really see my dad a whole lot when I was a kid. And I kind of thought like sports was the thing that would kind of help us spend more time together. So he was a big Missouri fan. So I tried to become a Missouri fan because of that. I remember that Guardians Classic. You probably remember that game whenever they played Iowa down at Kemper Arena.
Clarence Gilbert.
Took me to that. Yeah, my dad took me to that, and that's when I became a Missouri fan. And ever since then, it's kind of been stuck with me. I always joke if I was just born on the other side of state line, I'd be a much happier person because I would cheer for Kansas instead of Missouri. But I wouldn't trade being a Missouri fan for anything. It's definitely trying. But I always say that if you walk into a room and there are KU fans, K-State fans, and Missouri fans, talk to everybody. At the end of it, if you can probably guess what their team affiliation is just based on their personality. I've noticed that Missouri fans are just a lot more pessimistic. We're a lot more negative, and we always expect the worst to happen because the worst always happens.
I think you just summed it up right there. I think we're good, man. is so pessimistic. That's probably a good word for this last year in Missouri sports. I'm obviously immersed in it every day. You get to have a little bit of distance, and you talk about other things every day. But I mean, your view as kind of a fan and a media member of the last year in Missouri sports, I don't even know a word to describe it.
A complete disaster. I mean, literally everything that could possibly go wrong, it kind of become a reoccurring theme on our show that every time something would happen with Missouri, especially something off the field, we would play the cops theme. It really felt like we played the cops theme for Missouri twice a week because something would happen, whether it be Wes Clark get kicked off the team, whether it would be the strike or something. It just seemed like over the last calendar year, there was certainly a black cloud around the University of Missouri. Like, cheering for Missouri is a true test of patience. I don't know why anyone would choose to be a Missouri fan. Like, it is something that is given to you. And this year, it tried it to the absolute core of it. We can go through the individual teams and things if you want to. I mean, there were just so many problems just through every facet of it.
Yeah, I think you grew up like I did, a Missouri fan, a Chiefs fan, and a Royals fan. And man, you want to talk about wandering through the desert for a whole lot of years. That was us.
No, it absolutely was. The Royals had given me a nice little respite from the Missouri thing. So it made this baseball or this football season not – it didn't sting as much. I mean, it hurt, you know, whenever you watch them, because regardless of how much you're into the Royals season, if, you know, MU's on television, I will be watching and I will be sitting in front of the television and watching it. Like, this Missouri team, by their lack of offense, they were just so – difficult to watch. And I know you and I have talked about it before. I'm a little bit blessed in the fact of I'm so close to the Chiefs and so close to the Royals that my fandom of them is probably diluted a little bit from childhood. but I'm far enough away from Missouri and I don't have the day-to-day interaction with them. But that's the one team that I would consider myself still a true fan of, a still diehard fan of. I'm the person that's watching Missouri basketball against Winthrop on Tuesday on SEC Network Alternate 1. Like, I am the individual that's still doing that. So they have me 100%.
See, that's so interesting. And when I have media people on, we talk about the teams, but I like to – some fans, and some fans may tune out at this point, but a lot of fans are interested in kind of the business and how we go about things. And you brought up a point. I have somebody at least once a week, and it's really more often than that probably, phrase a question to me, okay, I know you won't admit it, but deep down you're a Missouri fan. And you just brought up a point. I do this every day. Win or lose, whatever happens, I have the same job. I got to go cover it. It really does take the emotion away. I grew up a Missouri fan. I listened to the Fifth Down game on the radio. But like you're saying with the Royals and Chiefs, when you're covering them every day, you just can't be a fan of it. And kind of the way you are with Missouri, that's the way I now am with the Royals, because it's all I've really got left to just be a fan of, and it's not part of work.
I think it's just like anything. Like, I kind of equate it to if you work at a restaurant. If you worked at Chipotle, right, you might love Chipotle, but if you ate Chipotle burritos every single day, at some point your love of the burrito would kind of diminish because you are around it so much. I'm not saying that I don't love the Chiefs or I don't love the Royals, but your fandom just changes because you know the players. You know the front office people. So that business relationship, I think, kind of dilutes the fan aspect of it just a little bit. I still want to see the Chiefs do really well and the Royals do really well. I mean, I would say our show is the biggest benefactor of the Royals being successful. I want the Royals to always win the World Series, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, I would never be negative towards them in that sense. But part of it, I think, is you just have to be fair in how you look at it. And I think, and you probably see this too, is, like, my job is to tell you the truth about the teams and to tell you accurately what I think. Like, sometimes you probably meet people, they're like, all right, tell me what you really think about Missouri. Well, I tell you what I really think about Missouri all the time. I don't just have these secret compartmentalized thoughts that I'll share with you in person, but on the radio, someone gives me a script and I read it. I try to accurately tell you what I think about what's going on in sports every single day.
My favorite question always starts with, what's the real story? Listen, dude, I make more money when I tell you the real story. So if I know the real story, now, are there situations, sure, where we don't report things? Absolutely. There is in every market, especially when you cover a team every day. Sometimes you've got to protect a source or something like that. But I get no benefit out of knowing things that I don't share with people.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no money in that. You know, like, there's
exactly. Absolutely
nobody, and I have this big scoop, but I can't tell you what it is. But if I see you, I'll tell you what it is, but promise not to tell anybody. Like, that doesn't benefit anybody. You know, your job is to get as many people to click on your website as possible. My job is from 2 to 6 to get as many people to turn on 6 to 10. So believe me, if there was something I could do to get more people to listen, I would certainly use it.
Absolutely, no question. Well, let's talk a little bit. Again, we're talking with Carrington Harrison, 610 Sports, in the afternoon, 2 to 6 in Kansas City. You can listen online. They've got an app. You can find it. If you want to find it, you'll be able to find it. So let's talk a little bit about Mizzou specifically and run through. I don't want to rehash the last year. I've done enough of that, and it's not any fun, but just kind of the programs in general. Gary Pinkel to Barry Odom. I mean, as, again, somebody who kind of straddles the fence of covering it but also being a fan of it, you know, your thoughts on where Mizzou football is right now?
I'm pretty optimistic about Missouri football. I think it's hard to predict it if you aren't every day into it like you are, just because there are so many questions about their offense. I'm still really positive about Drew Locke, and I made this point a couple of times on our show. As good as I thought Johnny Manziel was in college, Kevin Sumlin watched him practice his freshman year and said, that guy should redshirt. Like, as amazing as Johnny Manziel was, somebody still thought he needed a year to kind of sit, get bigger, learn the offense, et cetera. Drew Locke didn't have that last year. Like, Drew Locke literally went from playing a game against Blue Springs and Lee Summit West to then playing against Alabama. And, like, the next season, I understood why there was some, especially if you take away his number one option, which is Russell Hansborough last year, who battled injuries all year, and then gave that guy no receivers, no tight ends to work with. So I'm still really optimistic about Drew Locke. I feel like we say this every year. I think their D-line could be as good as it's ever been. Like, they just have so many options on defense that I'm not concerned at all about their defense. It's just, can they score? Like, they have so many new pieces on the offensive line, so many new running backs, so many new wide receivers, that I just don't know if they can score. But their defense is good enough again to get you to 5. Can their offense get you to 7? Can their offense get you to 8? that's the question I have about Missouri. And if you look at last season, I mean, they left at least three games on the table, where I think it was Vanderbilt game, should have won that one. They had a chance to win the Florida game, I think, if they could just score a little bit in the beginning. And Georgia, like, you had those opportunities to win those games, and your offense just completely let you down last season.
Yeah, the good news about the offense, it can't be worse. There's absolutely no way they can be. That was the worst major college offense that I can remember watching.
I remember I went to the game against UConn, the one that was at home.
The one that should have been the kind of tip-off to all of us, uh-oh, this isn't going to go very well.
I know, and I should have known then that that was a problem. And, you know, I had this debate with a lot of people, and you probably have this debate with a lot of people. Like, it didn't matter if Matty Mock was a quarterback. It didn't matter if Drew Lock was a quarterback. I mean, you needed Trevar Boykin last season to have a good offense, just with, like, his scrambling ability and those kind of things. Like, not many quarterbacks would have been able, I think, to flourish just given the circumstances that they had. But, again, this year my optimism is fully in. Their offense can't be much worse. I think their running game is going to be a little bit better. Their passing game just by definition has to be better. I think Drew Lock is going to be better this season. Like, this is a – 7 wins should be the expectation. Like, that's where Missouri is as a program. I don't think you're expecting them every year to win the SEC East. That's not realistic. But there's no reason you should miss bowl games. Hell, they got 100 bowl games now at this point. You have to be a bad college football team to not make a bowl game.
Yeah, I agree with you. In general, I think 7 should be the expectation. This year, I think 6 in getting back to a bowl game, because in 2012, Missouri was 5-7, but there were a lot of extenuating circumstances and reasons for that. I watched Missouri last year, and they legit were a 5-7 team. That's
yeah,
just
absolutely.
How good they were. I like to go into every season saying kind of ceiling and floor. I look at this Missouri team, the floor, people are going to hate to hear it. The floor is 3-9. I mean, they got three games they should win in the non-conference. But the floor is you lose to West Virginia and you don't beat anybody in the SEC. And when I say floor, I mean, there's no way they're worse than that. Ceiling, I guess the absolute ceiling, if I'm saying the worst they could possibly be is 3-9, I think the best they can possibly be is 10-2. And that is in no means am I saying Missouri wins 10 games. But, yeah, I mean, the over-under is 5.5, and I think that's fair. I think that'll get you equal money on both sides.
Yeah, the over-under I think is fair. Again, I just look at their defenses. I just think their defense is good enough to win you a couple SEC games. Like, they're going to have a game where an SEC play, they hold their opponent to 9. You're just asking your offense to give you 14 points for you to win a 14-9 game. Like, that's literally all you're asking. Like, I really do look at this defense as this might be the best defense they've had. They kept Barry Odom, so I expect that same continuity. And I think the pieces that they lost last season, they have replaced them in such a way that I don't expect there to be a drop-off in production. So I'm really high on their defense. And in college football, that gives you a chance, especially when I don't look at the SEC quarterback situation or the offense situation, like teams outside of LSU when you play them. Like, I look at it as 100% loss at West Virginia, at LSU. If I look at the schedule, I could probably find a couple other ones. But every other game, your defense is good enough to give you a chance.
At West Virginia, 100% loss for you, huh?
Yeah, 100%. I just
really?
I don't know how you can watch this offense from last season and then think on the road with that quarterback that they can win that football game in that environment.
Yeah, the counter argument for me on that is this is a brand new offense, and for about two quarters in a season, you are going to be able to come out and the other team's going to have no idea what you're going to do when you're a new coaching staff. So that to me, I would not pick Missouri to win that game, but I also wouldn't say my sure, LSU's a sure loss. And then there's one other one somewhere, but I couldn't tell you for sure which one, you know, just they're going to lose another game. They're going to lose more than one other game, but 100% they're going to lose one other one.
Yeah. I just look at it like new offense, road environment. Normally that's not the way you want to get your start.
Right.
I'd have a different opinion if that was the third game of the season and then they've had time to kind of run their offense a little bit and kind of work the kinks out. Like, it's going to be a work the kinks out thing on the fly, on the road, in that environment for that first game. I just don't look at that. Like, I always say in college football, the elite teams win all their road games. The good teams win most of them. The bad teams normally lose these kind of games. Like, I don't think Missouri's going to be a good team. Are they going to be an above-average team? Yeah. But they're not going to be a good team. Good teams don't win at West Virginia. Good teams win at Kentucky. Good teams win at Vanderbilt. A good team might steal at Florida or at Georgia. You don't go in this situation to win this game unless you are a real contender.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. One more on football for you. I know you guys have certainly had a chance to have Barry Odom on your show to talk to him a little bit. I always said after about 2 years of covering Gary Pinkel, I'll go to the press conference if you want me to, but I can sit here and write it right now before it happens. And honestly, I don't think from an interview, fans listening to him on the radio standpoint, that Barry's going to be a whole lot different. Do you?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, Pinkel had kind of got to that point. I thought Pinkel was pretty open towards the end of it when he knew it was the end, so he would kind of tell more stories.
Right.
Well, you are right. Pinkel did kind of get in that category of, like, he was kind of difficult to talk to, and you could kind of tell, like, early on how he was feeling by how he answered questions, and then after a loss, he wouldn't really expound on, all right, on that third and one call, what did you guys do? Like, he wouldn't really kind of think abstract like that. Odom, it's kind of hard to tell. I think Odom's kind of straightforward about non-football stuff. But when it comes to football stuff, it is a very canned answer. Yep. But right now, like, there's no adversity to face. But at some point, something's going to happen. So, I mean, he learned under Pinkel. I don't expect it to be much different.
Yeah, let's move on. And earlier, you talked about Missouri fans' pessimism. I don't know that I equate Missouri basketball fans right now to, like, 1997 Royals fans. I've very rarely seen a bigger bend over, thank you, sir, may I have another fan base than where Missouri fans are in regards to the basketball program right now.
No, that's absolutely where they are. And this is kind of one of those things that's, like, hard for me because I genuinely like Kim Anderson on a personal level. I think Kim Anderson has always been really good to me, and he's always been really good to the show. I mean, he just came on our show last week. I talked to him for, like, 20 minutes. So I really like Kim Anderson. But I just don't know how you can have hope and optimism in Kim Anderson in his ability to lead the team. The hope that I have right now, and I told him, the hope that I have right now in Missouri is not in him. It is in Terrence Phillips and Kevin Puryear. I think you have two potential top 10 SEC players on your team. Now, it might take junior, senior year for them to get there, and he might not be the coach when they get there. But that's the optimism. I think you have found your point guard, and I think you have another guy that can average 17, 18 points to kind of get you there. So, like, that's my hope and optimism. I was disappointed, like every Missouri fan, about the Michael Porter thing, just because you had kind of sold yourself on this pipe dream that they could get Michael Porter, that, man, he lives in Columbia. His dad works there. He's working out there. He seems to get along with the team. So you kind of sold yourself on that pipe dream. So, like, that kind of always propped up Kim Anderson to me.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time that Kim Anderson has to hand you something. He can't hand you, oh, we were competitive in that game. You got to hand me actual wins. You got to hand me that I go out to Mizzou Arena, that I make the drive from Kansas City to Columbia, and I see a competitive basketball game. Because that hasn't been the case so far. Like, why, if you live in Kansas City or St. Louis, would you drive to Columbia to see this team play basketball? Like, there's a chance when you drive, they could get beat by 35. Like, there's a legitimate chance that could happen. Why would I invest my money to do that and the time that it takes to go out there? So, like, that's what needs to change for Missouri. They have to finally get over that hump where it can't be, man, we were down 20 in the first half, but we played close and got it 6 in the second half. No, 15 wins is the expectation for this Missouri team. If they win 12 games, they got to start looking in a completely different direction.
Well, that leads into the next question I wanted to ask you. And, you know, I say all the time, and you read our message board, you read sports message boards around the internet, and those are the diehards. Those are the people. There's a couple stages of fandom of a bad team. The first one's anger, and the second one's apathy. Well, the people who are on my message board are never going to move past anger, because they are going to care. The people on my message board are the people that are going to show up in 6 years, if they're still going 8-23 every year, they're still going to be there. They're those core 3,000 people. I would imagine the people you and Danny hear from on a regular basis, you know, probably the super diehards aren't spending 4 hours on a Wednesday afternoon listening to your show for the 20 minutes you're going to talk about Missouri basketball. You've got maybe a little bit more casual fans. So your interaction with Missouri fans, I mean, has it moved well past anger into the apathy stage now?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is at the apathy stage. Like, I just think now with all the different entertainment options you have and how people quickly move on from things, you have to have something to grab them. And I think you're right, is the diehard fan they will always have. Like, Missouri basketball, as much as I've been through with them, it's very little they can do that I can say I'm done with watching them. Kind of like with the Royals. Like, I think the Royals is a perfect analogy. How the Royals got really popular in Kansas City and how they got to almost 3 million fans last year is the casual fan that went to one or two games now goes to five or six games a year. Like the casual Missouri fan that would make that drive once or twice a season is not making that drive once or twice a season, because why would you do it? Right. Why would you go out there and spend your time and money doing it? Why would I carve out a Thursday night to watch Missouri? And then especially when you play in the SEC, so you don't have that same rivalry. It was different when you were driving to go see MU K-State or MU Oklahoma. Now I'm really going to drive to see MU Alabama on a Tuesday at Mizzou Arena? Like, I'm all right. Like, I'll stay and watch that on TV. So, like, I think that's kind of working against them, too. There aren't basketball matchups that you do care about. And then the basketball matches that you don't care about, they get blown out in those games.
Yeah, there aren't basketball matchups you care about because the other team's fans don't care about them, even when they're good. And I've said this, I mean, I find myself, I'll watch the Big 12 Big Monday game. I've got no interest in watching an SEC basketball game that Missouri's not playing in that I don't have to cover. It just,
yeah.
Because
yeah, I mean,
10 of the 14 schools just don't care.
Yeah, I don't watch SEC basketball that's not Kentucky, or, you know, it'll be, you know, Florida will play Arkansas and I'll kind of watch it for a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the Big 12 in terms of watchability from top to bottom is just much more competitive, much more fun to entertaining. Like when you watch KU Oklahoma, like as much, I always say the college games that people love the most resemble NBA games. Like people love the college game that's 91-89. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what that is? That's Clippers Rockets. You know, like that is the game that you watch all the time. And like when you watch those Big 12 games, like they are very fast paced. Crowds are into it. You're watching future NBA players. You're watching great coaches. And like right now, who is the worst coach in the Big 12? Is it Bruce Weber? You know, Bruce Weber, who coached a national championship, you right. can argue is the worst coach in the Big 12. Like that's kind of crazy whenever you think about it on the surface.
Yeah, I got in trouble earlier this year when I watched KU Oklahoma four overtimes, and just I was on Twitter just saying, man, I missed that. I would, if there was a way for Missouri to play SEC football and Big 12 basketball, sign me up for that right now.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. Just living here in Kansas City, the only time I miss being in the Big 12 is in March. Like right. whenever you go down to Power and Light and you see the K-State fans and the Iowa State fans and the KU fans, and then you realize your team is playing in a conference tournament in Nashville, like that's when you miss being in the Big 12. For football-wise, I am ecstatic there in the SEC. Like I love the chance that they can be on that CBS 230 game. I love the big games that you go out and watch. Like I love now whenever Missouri plays Georgia, I look forward to when they play Florida because I know they're playing at the highest level of college football you can play. When it comes to the SEC, they're basically playing in the MAC plus Kentucky.
Right. Maybe that'll change in the next few years because the SEC has been good at times, but my argument is just even when they are good, nobody outside of Lexington, Kentucky, and maybe Fayetteville and Columbia really cares all that much. Move on real quick. And again, this is kind of the diehard fan versus the casual fan. And I'm not sure where you fall on this, but you know, Missouri fans now on my message board certainly are very interested in the future of the baseball and the softball programs. Is that something that's, I know it's not on the radar of most of your listeners. Is that something that's personally on your radar much at all?
No, the only thing I've kept up with was the protest that happened with the softball team.
Right.
Like I kind of treat it, like, those kind of sports are kind of like the Olympics to me. Like, once they get to a point where you tell me, all right, Missouri has a chance to go to the College World Series, then I'll start to watch it and pay attention. Like, oh, they got a chance to do it. I remember, I think it was Chelsea Thomas, that one softball pitcher a couple years ago. Like, I followed her kind of run. But, no, in terms of the everyday following, I do not follow either one.
Yeah, I think that's where most people are. You know, most people, if you say Missouri softball, they'd go, oh, yeah, they protested a game too this year. So, you know, that's kind of how this year's gone for Missouri fans. Just want to finish up with you and let you get running. I know you got a show to prepare for, but just a few quick ones. I mean, you grew up a Missouri fan. Who's your favorite Missouri athlete of all time? I don't care what sport it is. I don't care, current, former, whatever.
Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel was the first high school recruit that I ever followed that wasn't LeBron. Like, he was the first high school recruit that I ever followed from start to finish that I would go on his rival page. I would watch his highlights, and I just knew everything about Chase Daniel. I remember being at the game when he first got in for the first time. Like, Chase Daniel is probably my favorite. My favorite athlete probably goes that Grinky Chase Daniel.
Yeah.
So I will put Chase Daniel as my favorite Missouri player. I really like Phil Presti, too. Like, I know it ended very poorly with Phil Presti, but golly, whenever he was good, he was amazing to watch.
He was, and Carrington, I'm so sad you're so young. I mean, your first Missouri basketball game, Clarence Gilbert played. Like, Derek Chivas is what made me a Missouri basketball fan. So can you pretend you're a little bit older for the last couple minutes of this?
Yeah, I'll try. I'm just 27, so, you know, wow. It's more recent. Like, I just had Martin Rucker on my podcast last week, and I told him, like, I liked college football before 2007. But, I mean, I grew up in Kansas City, so it was just Chiefs and Chopper and all that kind of stuff. The team that made me fall in love with college football was that 07 Missouri Tiger team. Like, I remember when I bought my MUKU tickets, that was the first time they were going to play at Arrowhead, and I bought them for me and my dad. I bought just two tickets, and they were, like, up in the front. Like, I, you know, money I saved from working over the summer. So I bought those two. And then as the season continued to progress, it was like these tickets got more and more valuable. It was like, these two teams are actually kind of good. And I remember the first college road trip I ever went on was to watch that Missouri team. I went to the game at K-State. I went to watch them whenever they destroyed Nebraska. And so I saw that Missouri team play like four times in person. Like, that was the first team that I really loved. So, yeah, my whole frame of reference of a Missouri Tiger fan is just a lot younger than yours.
Yeah. Well, given that answer, I'm pretty sure I'm going to know your answer to this one already. But best Missouri game you've ever attended in person?
It is a tie between the KU-MU game in 2007 and the last MUKU basketball game at Missouri Arena. My friend actually knows somebody that went there, so I used some random person's student ID. I got a ticket for that game for $40, and I had to stand in the like the back of the student section. So I stood in the back of the student section, didn't have a seat, but I like kind of stood enough where I could still see the court. And when Denman just hit those last couple shots, I mean, I've never felt a place more tense than that. Like, I was at the wild card game with the Royals. That might be the only thing that's just as comparable, just because it was, man, the Royals have had this great season, and now it's going to end here at Kauffman Stadium. But there was such an atmosphere in Mizzou Arena that day. Is we cannot lose the last time we ever play Kansas in this building. Like, this might be the best basketball team we've had, you know, in the last 10, 20 years, however long it's been. We can't lose this last game to Kansas. So it was that feeling around it, and Marcus Dimon just completely changed it in the last, 4 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it had, like, I think 9 points in the last 2 minutes. Probably the best individual performance I've seen, because I wasn't there when Peeler scored 43 and his team lost in Lawrence. But two more quick ones for you. Missouri does or does not return to a bowl game in football this year?
Oh, yes. I would put yes. As we talked about, I think Missouri's defense is good enough to get you to five. I think their offense is going to be a little bit better. I wouldn't say really surprised if they got less than six, but I just think this team is better constructed than last year's team. I think you factor in that, you know, to me, Pinkel's focus had to be somewhere else because he was dealing with so much stuff off the field. If you factor in what happened at the end of the season, that clearly was a distraction to the team. I would put this team just a little bit better than last year's team. This team gets to six, in my opinion.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot with the last one. Feel free to dodge it if you want to. I would probably dodge it if you asked me the same question on your show. But into next year, Kim Anderson does or does not get another year, and Mac Rhodes does or does not hire his replacement.
I think Kim Anderson gets one more year. I think if you're going to fire Kim Anderson, the time was to do it this year. Like, while Michael Porter hadn't committed somewhere, I think the time was to maybe, like, really seriously go after Lorenzo Romar. You've now lost that thing that I don't know what you saw from Missouri in that trance, you know, over the last couple months. That would really change it. So unless they win 9 games again or something like that, I think this team, just experience-wise, is enough to get you to 14-15 that Kim Anderson will do it. So I'll give Kim Anderson this year. So if you ask me right now to bet on it, I would say yes, that Kim Anderson makes it another season.
Okay, so then Mac Rhodes doesn't even have to deal with whether he's hiring his replacement or not, because the underlying thing on that was, is Mac Rhodes still here in April?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see it. Like, again, if you were going to move on from Kim Anderson, wasn't it the time to do it after two? Like, wasn't the time to do it after 2 years? Because, I mean, Mac Rhodes, I don't think he's a dummy. Like, how can you look at this basketball team and think they're going to be good?
Right.
So if you're going into it with that kind of expectation, and as I think most of us are, you know, you can't put a, all right, make the tournament expectation on this team. If that's your expectation, have me or you coach the team, because me and you coaching the team have the exact same chance to make the tournament as Kim Anderson, all these people coaching it. It has to be about taking the step towards improvement. I think they have enough talent on their team, and now with Terrence Phillips and Puryear, they have enough to get to 14 or 15. So, again, I think Kim Anderson's coming back.
All right, Carrington, last thing, just throw out your Twitter handle. It's Carrington's entertaining follow on Twitter, and I know you recently tweeted out your 45-minute talk with T. Ruck last week, so let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at c.harrison. I'm that same thing on Instagram. She don't really use that a whole lot. Follow my co-host Danny, at Danny Parkins. I always give him hell about being a quasi KU fan, but he's a really good guy. And make sure you follow our work, at 6N Sports KC.
All right, man. I appreciate the time. Thanks a lot, and we'll be listening.
Thanks, Gabe. I appreciate it.
All right. Carrington Harrison, 6N Sports. Listen, I don't get into the – I have a lot of friends at both stations in Kansas City. Listen to whatever you want. Carrington and Danny do a good show. It's really kind of for a younger crowd, I think. You know, Carrington said it. He's 27 years old. He's a passionate guy. He's one of the more entertaining follows on Twitter, especially if you like Kansas City sports. But frankly, even if you don't, I don't even understand half his tweets because they're about pop culture, and I know less than nothing about pop culture. But if you are interested and do know something, follow him on Twitter and learn a little bit about that, too. Appreciate him taking half an hour and talking to us. Been wanting to get Carrington on for a while because he is certainly a Missouri voice in the Kansas City media. And during kind of the downtime, things a little bit slower, figured we'd take a chance to talk Tigers with him. So appreciate that. We will be back next Thursday with yet-to-be-determined guests on the PowerMizzou.com podcast.